reading from the Jiva Dharma, chapter 19, Pramaya, Abhideya Tattva. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Taksur Unmulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Trayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Yupasindu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, reading Jiva Dharma, and I have a sense we basically have our steady class who knows the story. And this part of the book, we're in the story of Rajanats. First part of the book is people coming to Krishna consciousness. And the inspiration, the knowledge that they get to bring them explains systematically the different subjects of Krishna consciousness. Now, we're in the part where we're following the life of Rajanath, the former logician, and how one advances once you're convinced about Krishna consciousness. And most of it takes place in Godrum Dweep when he's not yet living there, at the ashram of his guru, Raghunath Das Babaji. And now, with his uncle, his family was opposed, but his uncle, Vijay, he found out, had this interest, and they go together, and they begin to ask questions that deal with Abhideya Tattva. What is the means for realizing the absolute truth? Not what is the absolute truth. Not what is the result of worshiping the absolute truth, Vyojana, but what is the means of realizing the absolute truth? So he begins to ask questions of how you realize the absolute truth. And the answer is bhakti, and he begins to ask questions. He's systematic. Explanation of bhakti, and the first question is what's the intrinsic nature of bhakti, or really what is the definition of bhakti? And you remember Raghunath Das Babaji quoted the seminal verse by Rupa Goswami. His answers will be in the form, it's so brilliant, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote this, his answers will be in a summary of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So he gives the essential characteristics and the refining characteristics. And the essential characteristics are the intention to please Krishna, to make his desire our own. By following the disciplic succession who carries Krishna's desire. And the refining characteristic is that it must be free of all motivated desires. And then he asked what are its characteristics, and he described the six characteristics of bhakti: Klesh, Agni, Shubha, Da, Moksha, Lukuta, Krit, Sudulabha, Sandandana, Visheshatma, Sri Krishna, Karshani. Anyway, we discussed that. And then he asked, if it's so sublime, why those who study not achieve it? Because you can't understand God just by logic and analysis. God is a person, and a person only is known in love. And then he asked, what are the different stages? The stages are sadhana bhakti, sadhana bhakti, bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti. And he described what is sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti is realizing God by the use of the senses. It's before the love of Godhead is awakened in your heart. But you're using the senses to achieve the goal of bhava. That's sadhana bhakti. We don't yet have the natural love for God. We're trying to get that love. And therefore, we use our senses. Ihayasya arerdasya karmana manasa, with the work body and mind. Anyway, now he's, what are the distinguishing characteristics, feature of sadhana? Babaji says sadhana bhakti is any method that trains the mind to become Krishna conscious. Trains the mind to love Krishna by engaging the mind in focusing on Krishna by your body, your mind, and your words. And Vrajanath asks, well, how many kinds of sadhana bhakti are there? And Babaji says there are two kinds, Vaidhi and Raganuga. Rajanath, what is Vaidhi Bhakti? Babaji, the jiva's spiritual propensity is manifest in two ways. The regulations found in the codes of Shastra are called Vidhi, and the inclination that has its origin in this vidhi is called vaidhi pravitti, the tendency to follow shastra. And bhakti that is caused by the discipline of shastra is called vaidhi bhakti, because it has its origin in vaidhi pravitti. It's the inspiration. Vaidhi bhakti means the inspiration to serve Krishna by our understanding that it's the right thing to do, and therefore the inclination, therefore, to follow the directions of how to serve Krishna, which are found in the vidhi or the rules. The inspiration to serve, that from that perspective, I will inquire about the characteristics of spontaneous attraction, raga, a little later. Now, will you kindly describe the characteristics of vidhi? So the shastras have prescribed regular duties called vidhi, and have prohibited certain forbidden activities, nishedha. So there are rules, what you do, there are regulations, what you don't. There are niyam, and there are niyam. There are rules and regulations. The prescribed duty, vaidhi dharma, for the jiva is to follow all the regulations and avoid all the prohibitive activities. So your goal is to purify your heart, and your inspiration for doing that and developing bhakti is what is right and what is wrong based on the shastra. So you're very much inspired by the shastra. And that's where your faith is. Your faith is in the rule. Vrajanath, from your explanation, it seems as if Vaidhi Dharma consists of the rules and regulations in all the shastra. But the jivas of Kali Yuga are weak and short-lived, so they cannot study the prescriptions and the prohibitions of all the shastras and then ascertain Vaidhi Dharma. Do the shastras indicate how we can determine Vidhi briefly and practically? So here's a problem. If your inspiration is the rules and regulations of the shastra to do what's right, there are so many rules and regulations that you can get lost and you can get confused. So how to do it briefly and practically? The same question is asked by the sages of Namasharanya, Buri Burini Karmani. There's so many works. Now tell us the essence of the shastra and the ultimate absolute good, because prayena alpa, because the life is so short and we're so unqualified. So how is this practical for us? And Babaji responds, it is written in the Padma Purana 42.103 and the Narada Pancharatra 4.223. Smartavya Shatatam Vishnur Smartavyo Nakcha Tuchit Sarve Vihi Nisheha Sur Etiyor Eva Tinkari. Always remember Vishnu and never forget him. All the prohibitions and recommendations are servitors of these two instructions. So what is the objective? The objective is focusing on Krishna, because it's like a child when it's born out of the womb. The consciousness of the mother, when they see the child, is love. So it brings out the love. The focus on relationship, that is real relationship, brings out love. Bhaktivinod Thakur put it another way, that every vastu or thing has a shakti, and objects and acts of devotion have a bhakti shakti, have a potency. So that's how we advance. When we are thinking of Krishna, our love for Krishna comes out of our heart. Our desire to serve Krishna awakens. In Narada Bhakti Sutra, one of the definitions of bhakti by Sandalya, one of the great acharyas or something, that bhakti is that which uncovers our affection. So meditating on God, focus, it uncovers our affection. The whole purpose of rules is to, just like the definition of rituals that Mahamuni gave me from his study of Confucius, rituals conform ourselves to something higher than ourselves. There's a purpose for it. And in bhakti, the purpose of the rules is to help you think of Krishna or not forget Krishna. Duty, purport is that the arrangement of all various kinds of vidhi and nisheda within the shastra are based on these two basic sentences. Duty vidhi is ascertained to be that which makes one constantly remember Bhagavan, and forbidden activities, nished, are those that make one forget him. Remember Bhagavan Sri Vishnu constantly throughout your life. This is the basic prescription vidhi, and the arrangements of vanashram and so on or the maintenance of the jivas are subject to it. Never forget Krishna. This is nished, is the basic prohibition. Everything else, such as abandoning sinful activities, avoiding the tendency to divert one's attention from Krishna, Krishna Bhavamukta, and atoning to simple activities are all subordinate to this basic duty. So make it simple. What actually helps you to think of Krishna, and what helps you not to forget Krishna? Therefore, all the rules and prohibitions described in the Shastras are eternal servants of the rule to remember Krishna constantly, and the prohibition is never to forget him. It follows that the regulation to remember Krishna is the fundamental principle among all the regulations of Varnashram and other institutions. And now, this is also in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's going to quote a verse, how all the Varnas and Ashrams are born from the body of Vishnu, meaning that the purpose of all the Varnas and Ashrams are to serve Krishna. Atapumbhya Dvija Shrestha Vanashrama Vibhagasa Sunushti Tasya Dharmasya Sam Siddhir Hari Toshinam. Sri Chamasa said, the Brahmins came into existence from the mouth of the primordial Sri Vishnu, the Kshatriyas from his arms, the Vaishyas from his thighs, and the Sudras from his feet. These four Varnas were born along with their particular characteristics, as were the four specific ashrams. A person living amongst these Varnas and ashrams becomes intoxicated by his high social position, Varna, and spiritual position, ashram, and fails to worship his Ishtadev, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, even disrespects him. Such a person falls down from his position in the system of Varna and Ashram, loses all his prestige, and takes birth in the lower species. So, just basically saying that, it's just supporting that everything is for Vishnu, because they're all born from Vishnu. They're all parts of Vishnu, and they're meant to serve Vishnu. Rajanath, why doesn't everyone who follows the regulations of Varnashram practice Krishna Bhakti? Babaji, Srila Rupa Goswami explains that amongst all those who follow the regulations of Shastra, only those who develop faith in Bhakti are eligible to engage in Bhakti. They are not attracted towards the regulations of material life, nor do they renounce material life. Rather, they follow the ways of ordinary civilized life to maintain their livelihood, and at the same time practice the sadhana of Shuddha Bhakti with faith. So he's explaining the relationship between people and Varnashram. It's not that Varnashram, following Varnashram makes you advance. Varnashram is a support to make you advance in whatever particular path of self-realization you're following. Because not everyone in Varnashram is following Bhakti. Only those who have developed Shraddha or faith in Bhakti follow Bhakti. Not one who is a perfect Brahmana, Kshatriya, etc. And as we know from the Bhagavatam, Dharmasya Yapavargasya Nartastasya Pakalpate. Dharma is Dharmasya. Dharmasya Apavargasya. That Dharma is meant for liberation. And how is Dharma meant for liberation? That if you follow Varnashram, you're more likely to keep your door open and meet a bhakta and get devotion. A civilized jiva becomes qualified to engage in bhakti as a result of sukriti accumulated in the course of many, many lives. So this also is, we discussed this before, how it works, that somehow or other coming in contact with an object of devotion or an act of devotion makes you inclined for serving God. But only, it's called bhakti prada sukriti, the sukriti that gives you bhakti. But only when that builds up does it come to the point where you realize not that you just, it's good to serve God, but it is the goal of life and the only thing to do. And that's called pure devotional service. There are three types of such faithful people. Anishta, neophyte, Majjhim, intermediate bhakta, and the Uttama, highly exalted bhakta. Very interesting here, he says faithful people. So the Kanishta is also a faithful person in the fact that they have a conception that it's the goal of life. And therefore, it's the result of sukriti accumulated over many, many, many years, even to become a Kanishta Adhikari. As it's defined here, as the beginning qualification to practice devotion with the conception to please Krishna. Bhajanat, it is said in the Bhagavad Gita that four kinds of people perform bhakti. Artha, those who are distressed, Jigyasu, the inquisitive, Atarthi, those who desire wealth, and Gyanis, those who are searching for knowledge of the Absolute. What kind of bhakti are they qualified for? Babaji, when they associate with saintly sadhus, their distress, their inquisitiveness, their desire for wealth, and their desire for knowledge are removed, and they develop faith in unalloyed devotional service. So these are the people that come to bhakti. This is before Kanishta Adhikari. This is how they come. And then they become eligible to engage in bhakti. This is the cause. They're distressed or they're inquisitive. When they associate with saintly sadhus, their distress, their inquisitiveness, their desire for wealth, and their desire for knowledge are removed, and they develop faith in unalloyed devotional service, then they immediately become qualified for engaging in bhakti. So their distress and everything, their desires lead them to association. And the association, by that, they become qualified for bhakti. Prominent examples of this are Gajendra, Chaunaka, and other rishis in Namashranya, Dhruva, and the four Kumars, respectfully. So Gajendra in distress, Chaunaka and the rishis curious, Dhruva in want of wealth, and the four Kumaras in terms of knowledge. Bhajanat, do devotees attain liberation at all? Babaji, there are five kinds of liberation. Dalokya, who live on the same planet as Bhagavan. Dharishti, to have the same opulence as Bhagavan. Dhamipya, to have constant association with Bhagavan. Dharupya, to attain bodily features similar to Bhagavan's. And Sayuja, to become one with Bhagavan. Bhaktas of Sri Krishna do not accept Sayuja, Mukti, at any cost, because it is blatantly opposed to the principles of Bhakti. So that Sayuja is to merge. These are five types of liberation.
Salokya, Sarishtis, and Sarupya are not fully opposed to bhakti, but they still retain some adverse elements. So what does that mean? It's a kind of a desire. Sarupya means to have the same form as Krishna. Samipya, Salokya means the same planet. Samipya means anyway, they're different things. The bhaktis of Krishna completely reject these four kinds of liberation that are manifested in Sri Narayana's abode. And I think this was the question, how can they go to Narayana's abode? I have a problem with the time opposed to bhakti, because they're actually there. But it's opposed to Braja Bhakti. It's opposed to Kevala Bhakti. Sri Guru Charana Padma Kevala Bhakti Sadhana. Kevala Bhakti means Braja Bhakti, where there's a certain level of selflessness in the relationship. It's perfect, more perfect than most perfect. It's also perfect to be with Narayana. But there's something there for oneself in your bhakti. In some circumstances, these forms of liberation provide comforts and opulences. Within the mature stages, they guide one towards prema bhakti. If their ultimate result is only comfort and opulence, bhakti should simply reject them. Bhakti should reject them. What to speak of liberation, even Narayana's prasad does not appeal to the unalloyed bhaktis of Krishna. Well, that's the nature of bhakti, exclusiveness to God in a very intimate relationship. And everything they do is to facilitate that relationship. You can imagine it's love for God. Love for God as he's fully manifest in a very, very intimate way. And that's your love. And there's nothing else that one is attracted to. It's real love. It's exclusiveness. It's possessiveness. So it's not accommodating of other conceptions or ideas in relationship. That becomes your consuming goal. Sri Narayana and Krishna have the same fundamental form and nature, Sarup, from the point of view of Siddhanta. But from the viewpoint of Rasa, Sri Krishna's super excellent glory is an eternal fact. So from the platform of rasa, there's Siddhanta and there's rasa. From the standpoint of Siddhanta, Narayana and Krishna are the same person. But from the standpoint of rasa, Krishna means when that personality of God fully reveals himself in love. And therefore, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Krishna is first described as Akila Rasamrita Murti. He's the full embodiment of love. He's fully manifest. It's not that there's a Bhagavan, a Paramatma, and Brahman. It's one entity received in three ways. And same thing with Krishna and Narayana. It's the same person in a different moods. And of course, simultaneously one and different, that same person can manifest in many, many ways to satisfy the varieties of love. But the manifestation of Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. It's the full manifestation, of God. So, and that's why Radha was not satisfied
when she saw Krishna at Kurukshetra. It was the same person, but not manifest as her lover. It's the same person, but the intimate side, which was the object of her love, was not manifest. Vrajanapit, is it only those who are born in Aryan families and who follow the regulations of Varnashram who are eligible to engage in bhakti? Babaji, the entire human race is qualified to gain eligibility for bhakti because there's no material qualification to engage in a relationship which you naturally have. Like a mother, what's her qualification? It's just love. It's not social status, it's not learning, it's not pedagogy. It's just love. The same thing, we have relationship with God. There's no other qualification except love. And therefore there's so many verses, just like in Kumbh Mela, in the month of Magh. There's no, you know, qualification to take bath. Everyone is eligible. They just have to have the sukriti or piety to want to. Vrajanath, in that case, it seems that people who are situated in Varnashram have to follow two sets of duties, the regulations of Varnashram and the rules of Shuddha Bhakti, where those situated outside of Varnashram have only one duty, which is to follow the limbs, angas of Bhakti. This means that people situated in Varnashram have to endeavor more because they have to follow the material regulations and the spiritual regulations. Why is this? So he's asking a question. Let's see what's answered. It seems that when you're in Varnashram, you have so many obligations. And when you're not, then you don't. It's just like if someone is in their family and then has to practice Krishna consciousness, then they have two, you know, they have one obligation to their family and another for spiritual duty, where someone who's just like a bum and comes to Krishna consciousness, he only has the obligation to serve Krishna. So it seems kind of strange that the very thing that a person needs to stabilize their life, for the pursuit of Krishna consciousness, is the very thing that seems to distract one. One enters into the Grihastha ashram to continue on the path of bhakti, but it seems the very thing that actually distracts one. So let's see what this answer is. Babaji, a bhakta who is qualified for Shuddha Bhakti may be situated in Varnashram, but his only duty is to follow the Anga of bhakti, and then all his worldly duties are fulfilled automatically. There is no fault in neglecting worldly duties when they're independent of bhakti or post. So if you're in Varnashram, everything you do is for Krishna. You're doing it because everything is secondary to praying bhakti, but it doesn't mean that things don't have value. So you're engaged in that to help you in your bhakti. So you do your duties responsibly. And those that are opposed to bhakti, then you give them up. He's saying it's not that you have two duties, you have one duty. A qualified bhakta is by his very nature not inclined to neglect prescribed duties or to perform forbidden activities. In spite of this, he accidentally commits some sinful activity. He does not have to perform the penances that are prescribed in the rules governing karma. When bhakti resides in the heart, sins that the bhakta commits by chance do not create a lasting impression, and they are destroyed very quickly. That is why bhakti do not need to perform any separate penance. Because
Bhakti is the purifying process. So in the path of Gyan, when you commit a simple activity, you have to atone for it, to purify yourself, to become qualified for Gyan, because there's material prerequisites for it. Bhakti has no material prerequisite, just to do it. So even if you commit some mistake, then there's no particular atonement. You take up the process of bhakti again. It is said in Srimad Bhagavatam that those who are under the shelter of Bhagavan are not indebted to anyone. Devarshi bhutapta ninam patrinam akinkaro nayam rani chavajan saratmanaya sharanam saranyam itomukundam parahitya kartam. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.4. One who completely surrenders to Bhagavan Mukunda, the affectionate protector of the surrendered souls, no longer remains indebted to the devatas, forefathers, other living beings, kinsmen, or guests. He is not subordinate to anyone, and he's not obliged to serve anyone. The purport of the final instruction of Bhagavad Gita 18.66 is that Sri Krishna releases one from all sins if he gives up all sorts of duties and comes to his shelter. So this verse is quoted from the 11th canto. The ultimate obligation is to serve Krishna, and everything is meant to bring you to that point. So if you come to that point legitimately, then you're no longer in debt to any other duty. Because the indebtedness to a duty is because it's a fundamental building block to bring you to the point of Krishna consciousness. But if you come to the point of Krishna consciousness, then you're not obligated, even for the atonement of your sins. The essence of Gita is that when a person becomes qualified for unalloyed bhakti, he is no longer obligated, obliged to follow the regulations of Jnana Shastra and Karma Shastra. On the contrary, he attains all perfection simply by following the path of bhakti. That is why Sri Krishna declares, Name Bhakta Pranashyati, my bhakta is never vanquished. Therefore, this promise of Krishna should be held above all. When Vijay Kumar and Brajanath heard these words, they said, we have no further doubts in our hearts concerning bhakti. We understand that karma and jnana are of little consequence, and without the mercy of bhakti, there's no auspiciousness for the jiva. Prabhu, please now be merciful and make our lives successful by telling us about the angas of bhakti. So the next class will discuss the angas, or the different practices of bhakti. Are there any questions?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. This is Gail.
Hi, Bhav Gail. Hi, Krishna.
Yeah, I have two questions. One is my old one. From, I know you tried to address it this in this class about you know, the those who are interested in the five kinds of liberation and attain the Vaikuntha planets. So I do accept that there's perfect, more perfect, and, you know, most perfect Kevala Bhakti. But at the same time, you know, either you're selfless or you're not, you know. And so I don't understand how those who are interested in those kinds of liberation are actually perfect when they do have desire.
Yeah. Let's see. They desire to have the same form as Krishna. But that's just so that they can be in Krishna's entourage. Because one of Krishna's pleasures is walking with beautiful people. So you perform that service
and somehow it's dovetailed. I don't understand either, because there is, you know, love of Godhead in Vaikuntha, and it's past the Anartana Vritti. You know, you're finished with your anartas.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I always thought that the Kevala Bhakti is just because the propensity to love God is in the form of majesty, then within that love, there's no selfishness. Within that love, there's a type of obligation or duty, because that's part of the love. You can have pure love for your father, but there may be some fear if you really respect him. But that fear may do something wrong. My father is here. I respect them. So I don't get how that refers to selfishness. I don't really understand it. Just a proclivity to serve. I can't even say selfishness, because it's beyond Bhava Bhakti. It's Prema Bhakti.
Okay.
Questions, Gail?
Yeah. It might be a little difficult because our connection seems to be breaking up, but I'll try. Can you just distinguish for me a little bit the those who, you know, there are four types of people before you become Kanishtha, you know, who come to Krishna consciousness. And two of them are those who are inquisitive and those in search of knowledge. So, you know, the distinction is a little fuzzy for me.
Right. I wish I could find that. Yeah. Inquisitive and search. I always thought about the difference, and then I read some place where that difference was really, you know, highlighted, what the material desire in that is. Inquisitiveness, search for knowledge. The difference.
Yeah, especially, like, you know, since the four Kumaras, you know, are, you know, I mean, it doesn't seem like those who are in want of knowledge are interested any longer in anything material.
Yeah, the search for knowledge means, that means they were impersonalists. You know,
mm-hmm.
That's coming to bhakti. So that means they were impersonalists. So the search for knowledge, and inquisitiveness. Let me just meditate on that for a second. The search for knowledge. One is kind of like, I think the search, the jnani, it's not searching for knowledge, it's jnan. It's the desire for liberation. And the inquisitive is just to know more. I think that's the difference. You just want to learn.
So
it's not necessarily desire. The jnani is desire for liberation. It's for jnana.
Okay, but
go ahead. It's not just to read a lot of books.
Right. So if the desire is for liberation.
Understand you're not the body. Understand the difference between the body and the soul. That's jnana. And you're doing that to seek liberation. But the curious is a search for knowledge, so it's different. You may not be interested in jnana.
If the jnanis want liberation, I don't know what kind of liberation. They want to merge, or what is it they're looking for? In other words,
it's impersonalist.
So then why are they interested in Krishna consciousness then?
They become interested in Krishna consciousness. There are jnanis that be bahunam janmanamante jnanavamam papajite vasudeva sabha, that after many, many births, one who is interested, Bahunam Janmana Hote Gyanavan Mam Prapadyate, he's interested in Gyan, he's interested in liberation, and he may develop a desire to serve Krishna by that path. Just like in the beginning of Jiva Dharma, there was the impersonalist sannyasi who was meditating in Varanasi, or there was someone meditating in the impersonalist sannyasi was meditating, and a devotee came by with pure devotional service, singing Nitai Goranga, Nitai Goranga, Nitai Goranga. And that interested him in bhakti because he got a different type of sukriti. He got bhakti prada sukriti. So that's how it happens. So, and generally the path of, there it also is, so you can come to bhakti through that because you're already performing the work of, it's mentioned also in Bhakti Sandarbha that Gyan is a type of bhakti because you're trying to become detached from the material conception of life. So it's moving you towards that, and if you're lucky, it will move you towards bhakti.
Okay, so I think what I was confused about is, you know, these four types of people. Originally, I think what was happening, I was thinking that these four types of people come to Krishna consciousness in order to satisfy, you know, to satisfy their desire for wealth, their desire for knowledge, their desire to, you know, get relief from distress, you know. So I was thinking that in that same way that the Gyanis also
is not independent of bhakti. So to even get Gyan, they have to somehow come in touch with bhakti. But in coming in touch with bhakti, then they may give up Gyan. But no path is independent of bhakti because you got to get God's grace. So they worship God, even though they have an impersonal conception of that him, but they may become attracted like the four Kumaras who smell the incense. Or Sukadeva Goswami, Atmaramas, Jamunayo, Nigranat, Uyukurme, Kovantorpikim, Bhaktim, like Sukadeva Goswami. So it may lead to that. Because you may engage in bhakti to get it. But not with the objective of becoming a devotee, but somehow, just like the person who is seeking wealth, his objective is not the money. His objective is the money, but he gets Krishna. So the person's objective may be Gyan, and he may perform bhakti and then get Krishna.
And what's an example of how the Gyani comes in, comes in contact with, you know, in other words, like you said, no, I know, but I'm saying, you know, you said, you know, there's no path that's independent of bhakti, you know, even to get something less than bhakti. So
because all Gyanis have to worship God. They worship, it's called Panchaposhana. They have Vishnu and Shiva and Ganesh. There has to be worship because they realize
they
without mercy.
Well,
they also worship Vishnu.
But they worship those. But then their conception, though, is to worship those forms to get beyond that concept, right?
Right.
Because they think, they think it's inferior conception.
Right. Well, they not only think it's inferior, they think it's illusory. But it's not illusory, it's real.
Yes,
when they worship Vishnu,
right. Yes.
They can get that.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Gail. Anybody else okay. like to say hello? Okay, Vanshikopa to the